Telling Lies is the latest release from developer Sam Barlow. Like his previous game, the well-received Her Story, Telling Lies is an FMV game that tasks the player with unlocking a mystery, woven into a number of video clips. Published by Annapurna Interactive, it follows in their tradition for contemplative, emotional experiences, and that's made clear in its original score. Composed by Nanita Desai, it's her first music for video games for 2 decades, following a celebrated career in film and TV. For this bonus episode of The Sound Test, ahead of Season 2's debut on November 1st, I caught up with Nanita for a close look at her work on Telling Lies. We talk about some of the interesting methods she used to capture the title's inherent humanity, her background in sound design, and more. I hope you enjoy this conversation, which first broadcast live, and come back in November to catch the start of my next series of VGM documentaries. Hello, Nanita, can you hear me okay?
Yes, hello, Lee.
Excellent, looks like we're broadcasting all fine as well, which is always a good start.
Okay, cool.
So, how are things today?
Very well. I've had a full busy day working in the studio and looking forward to talking to you this evening.
Good, good. Yeah, same here. I've been looking forward to it too because Telling Lies is a really, really cool project. So I thought we'd start out because as far as I'm aware, it's one of your first video game projects, if I'm not wrong.
Well, yes, it is. Yes and no, funnily enough, because I actually started off my career in video games. I started off doing sound effects and music eventually for a couple of years on various games for a publisher called Empire Interactive, going way back over 20 years ago. And I worked on various things like Pro Pinball and Monopoly for Nintendo 1 and PlayStation 1 and flight simulators. So, but then the publisher got taken over and a lot of the developers I was working for we all disbanded, and my career ended up in film and television. So I've been scoring linear film and TV for the last 20 years, and it's kind of come full circle where I've been thrown back into the world of games again. And boy, have things changed.
Right, yeah.
Things have changed, but they haven't changed. You know, music is music, but things have become a lot more sophisticated and the audiences are much more demanding, as they are in all forms of entertainment. So, yeah, so it's been wonderful. It's been a wonderful experience to score this game.
Right, it's interesting to hear that you have that background in sound design as well, because I have a massive interest in that, and I actually have a whole episode coming out about just recording car audio and things like that, so I'd actually be interested to hear a little bit about your background with that.
Well, my first love and my first passion, actually, is in sound effects and sound design. For me, sound is sound, you know, whether it's music or sound effects, it's all part of the audioscape and part of storytelling in a film. I mean, how many times do you watch watch something visual without the sound? It means nothing without the sound. You know, if you look at genre movies like horror movies, for example, you know, if you don't want to get yourself scared, you switch off the sound.
Absolutely.
The soundtrack. Yeah. But in terms of my background, so I actually have a degree in mathematics.
Right.
And as part of my degree, I was really interested in the wave equation and really boring nerdy stuff and physics and sound synthesis, and that then led on to my interest in sound effects, and I love technology, and I got work as a sound designer and sound effects, doing Foley editing, dialogue editing, sound design, sound effects editing on feature films. So I was working as part of a team as a freelancer at Shepperton Studios, Twickenham, Pinewood, and Soho facilities, post-production facilities. I also got to work on with some big Hollywood movies and big budget movies, creating sounds. And from that, I was also working in games, but then from that, I sort of really missed the music industry. I really wanted to get into music and telling stories with music for film and television. So I got work as Peter Gabriel's assistant music engineer. So then I got into music engineering, and I was working at fantastic recording studios. So I came into the industry from a very technical perspective, and I loved. I mean, you're talking about sound effects. I remember doing this sound for a World War II flight simulator, and I was recording sound effects and building up sound effect libraries of Spitfires and Tiger Moths and all these wonderful old World War II planes, because my partner also used to fly aeroplanes as a hobby. So we used to go up in light aircraft, and I got to know all the airfields in Kent and near Oxfordshire. So I'd used to take my portable DAT recorder and go off and record a whole bunch of sounds, and then chop them up and create a sort of a custom library and integrate them into the game. So yeah, I used to do a lot of that. I used to travel the world with
Right.
my portable DAT recorder, and microphone and headphones, just building up a whole library of unusual sound effects, because that's as a sound editor, that's you're only as good as your sound library, and you don't want to use off the shelf libraries that you can buy in like buying ready-made food in Tesco's or Sainsbury's. You want bespoke, unique sounds that you sort of build up over the years. So I do have a huge, extensive sound effects collection as well that I'm quite proud of.
Yeah, and you mentioned that background with a huge interest in old school synthesis and things like that, which is another area that I love to look into. So, was that something that you were ever incorporating into your sound effects as well?
Yeah, I mean, I was one of the first. I got my one of my first jobs in the industry was working as an assistant sound designer at Delaine Lee, which was one of the top facilities in Soho, in Dean Street. And they're still around, and they're still working on amazing projects. And they had a Synclavier, which was a revolutionary sort of in terms of the digital age of sound synthesis. It was a bit like the Fairlight and the Synclavier. They were both in competition with one another, and they were the one of the first major samplers where you could record sounds into it, and then you could play them across a keyboard, and you could manipulate all the sounds. People like Trevor Horn used the Fairlight, I think, and Peter Gabriel used the Fairlight, and Thomas Dolby, and all these old sort of 80s sort of synth heroes would use the Synclavier. And I mean, at the time, they cost about £250,000. It cost the price of a house. You could buy a house for that kind of money. So I was very, very lucky that this facility had one, and I got to use one every day for fun. And I'd sort of work on it out of hours as well, and do my own stuff. And when I was at school, my school bought an EMS VCS3 synthesizer, which is highly coveted today. And I borrowed one from my school music department. I sort of brought it home, but I borrowed it for about 2 years, and and no one noticed it because no one else was interested in using it. So I learned about analog sound synthesis by using this really amazing synthesizer. And it looks a bit like Battleship, that old game where you sort of stick pins in and out of a board and and that's how I learned about the basics of sound synthesis. And from there, I sort of built up a synth collection. And it's funny because when I started, recording studios used to be huge with lots of gear. And then over the years, when digital computers came in, everyone got into minimalism and people were selling off all their hardware and old big mixing desks. And so I sold a lot of my gear off. And now it's become very fashionable. And I've been buying all these old synthesizers again. And I regret selling some real gems that I had, like the Yamaha DX7 or the Roland D50. Actually, I still have my Roland D70, which is the first synth I ever bought when I was 18 years old, and it's still beautiful. I have it just for two sounds that I really cherish. So, there's some wonderful technology, and I like using the latest technology as well, sort of a combination of old vintage analog hardware and things like I have a Roly Seaboard. I was one of the first people in the country to get one about 4 or 5 years ago. And it looks like a keyboard, but the only way I can describe it is it sort of bridges the gap between creativity and technology. And that's one of the reasons why I'm really interested in new technologies, is when you have a musical idea, you want to get it down very quickly. But when you have technology and computers and keyboards and software, the time it takes you to get your idea down, by the time you've done that, that creative spark has gone. And so with something like the Roly keyboard, I can get my ideas down very, very quickly and express it. And it's just, technology is a great tool for creative ideas and getting your ideas down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you mentioned how much things have changed since those days when you used to work on things years and years ago, around 20 years, I think you said. And were you actually involved in any of the sound design or just any of the general audio of Telling Lies outside of the composing then as well?
No, I wasn't, actually. I wasn't. It was purely music. I'd say the majority of my work is just writing music for projects these days. But that being said, I do sometimes, occasionally, I do integrate creative sound design. I sort of like to blur the lines between music and sound design. So I'm working on a project at the moment, very immersive feature film, where I'm working very closely with the sound designer, and where creating sort of music design for that particular project, which will be out next year. But Telling Lies was pure music, but it was an interesting process, how we handled that one.
Well, I was just going to ask how you came on board with the project then, if it had been so long since you'd worked on a video game.
Well, Sam approached me out of the blue, and he contacted me via Twitter, which I've never had that before. He sent me a direct message and said, "Hey, Nanita, I've been listening to some of your music. Would you be interested in scoring an interactive movie?" And that's how he pitched it to me. And of course, one half of me thought, yes, of course, I'd love to. It's like a dream project. And on the other hand, I thought, are you for real? I thought there'd be some sort of long process involved in either pitching or having lots of discussions about it. And of course, we did discuss it, but he made up his mind, and he'd obviously been listening to some of my music, and there was something in a few tracks that I'd written that really resonated with him, and he thought that I'd be the right person for the job. But he also, I think he wanted someone that had cinematic storytelling sensibilities, not necessarily, I don't think he wanted a video game composer with those that kind of skill set. I mean, I was a little bit concerned because I don't, I'm not totally up on the technology of some of the software that's needed, like WWISE and FMOD and all these audio implementation software that's required to put music into the game. But I did work with the sound designer from Gladestock Studios, Mark Angus from Gladestock, and we had a few sessions together where we worked out a system that we thought would work in terms of how the music would best be written and approached to be able to handle within the game engine and implemented. And it worked out really well in the end, I think. So we didn't want to have a score. I mean, we're looking at over 10 hours worth of footage, video, full motion video footage material. And so we thought, well, we're not going to have 10 hours of music, and we're not going to have wall-to-wall music either. We decided that we'd have a minimal amount of music, but when you do have the music, it has an impact on the narrative and the storytelling. So that was quite an interesting approach that we took. And in terms of the musical style, Sam and I, it was basically just Sam and I talking creatively, handling the whole that sort of creative aspect. And Sam gave me some of his inspirations, and we went back and forth. I mean, I have a real soft spot for genre films like The Conversation, you know, spy, covert intelligence, hacking, thrillers. I love those kinds of movies. And Sam mentioned some of his inspirations, like films like Francis Ford Coppola's The Conversation and Scandi noir thrillers and 70s spy and thriller films such as Chinatown. And I like films like The Game. And so all those kind of influences really came into play. And then we'd exchange playlists, we'd exchange musical playlists just to find a way of finding a shorthand for communicating with each other. So we listened to, I mean, I Sam had been listening to a lot of material when he'd been writing the script, and he gave me a script that was several hundred pages long to wade through. I didn't have any visuals at all to work with, which was unusual for me because I'm so used to writing to picture, and I'm so used to being inspired by visuals and actors and scenes, you know, with on film and TV. But the good thing about Sam is that he's so detailed in his he's very elaborate, and he gives very visual analogies. So that really helped me draw a mental picture of the sound world. And we had a lot of in-depth conversations about the characters and their multiple facets of their personalities and their dramatic arcs. So in that regard, it wasn't actually too different from scoring for film, because I'm representing, you know, what's happening on with the characters.
Absolutely. And just in case any of my listeners aren't fully aware of this title, Telling Lies is this really interesting, as Nanita has put it, cinematic experience in which you have a kind of interactive user interface, and you're tasked with moving through all of these movies and short clips and placing together a puzzle and mysteries along the playthrough, obviously with a score by Nanita. And it's a mostly visual experience and watching and looking out for clues. So was there anything about that, that experience of the player that particularly informed how you wrote the music?
Yes, well, I mean, we have it's very much it's a very cerebral, rich, complex story. And so so what we did was I wrote a theme for each character. So we took the idea of a smaller core of themes that could really add some connective tissue to glue together the very non-linear and fractured experience of the game. So I wrote a theme for each of the four main characters, And each theme had to have a very duplicitous quality to it. So you have the surface exterior of the character, the main loop, and then you have a hidden section that's revealed once you dig deeper into the story and that person's psyche and true motives of what's happening. So as you play the game, as you go deeper, as you get deeper down the rabbit hole in of a plot moment, you suddenly hear this hidden musical layer of that character's personality subliminally revealing itself. So that was quite interesting. And so just working from very detailed character notes, and I had lots of various drafts of the script. And when I'm writing, I like to really inhabit the character's personality and step into each character's shoes. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some really great specific things going on there that we could get into, but the last thing I want to do is spoil the game for anybody. So we won't go too deep into character motivations or anything like that.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. When it came to sort of working out the soundtrack, the score soundtrack, I'd named each piece after each character, and we said, no, we can't do that. We have to give each track title a very abstract title, so that you don't, because otherwise even the names of the tracks would be spoilers, even the names of the characters are spoilers. You're not It gives away a lot when you actually play the game and you reveal or uncover a name. It unravels so much within the context of the game, because you're basically, you play an NSA agent. You uncover this NSA hard drive that contains about 10 hours worth of video footage, and it's all undercover CCTV covert material, and you're watching it in a very non-linear way. It's very fragmented. There's sort of hundreds of fragmented clips ranging in duration from 30 seconds to 10 minutes at times, and you type in a search word. So if you type in a word like an obvious one, like love or murder, it will pull up the first five video clips that contain that word in the dialogue. And then you sort of scrub backwards and forwards, and you watch and you sort of experience the game as opposed to solving it. You're creating your own experience of the characters and unraveling the situation, if you like. So it's like a detective game.
Absolutely.
It's quite,
And
yeah.
it also takes multiple playthroughs in order for you to actually see all of the footage. So is there anything like that in the music where there's any actual music you might be able to miss or something like that?
I don't think so. I mean, the way we've worked it is that, for example, when you are delving deep into focusing on one particular character, that character's theme will start playing. And I was writing it in stems, so it starts off quite simple with the piano, for example, and it will then develop as you get deeper into that character and their story. Things will start developing more, and that and it's it, it creates it's part of the atmosphere of the whole game. I mean, the game, a lot of people have commented on it and said, you play it at night, you have the headphones on, the lights dimmed, and with the whole experience, you're immersed in this very moody noir atmosphere. And I'd like to think that the music really enhances that and helps that along at the same time, helping to create this world. And that's what I enjoy about every project that I work on, is that every project I work on is very different, and I don't like to repeat myself stylistically too much, so that I sort of pride myself in that when I'm working on a project and someone's listening to my music, they won't be able to recognize that it's Nonita Desai. They'll sort of just get wrapped up into the world of the music and the game and or the project that I'm working on. So each I'd like to create a unique sound world for each project. So with this one, I wanted to bring in the London Contemporary Orchestra. Talking to Sam, when we were discussing in the early stages how we'd approach it, and Sam really wanted a modern orchestral score. We were inspired by all these different references, the film references and musical references, and because the game is about human relationships, everyone's deceiving everyone, everyone's manipulating everyone, hence the title, Telling Lies. There are a lot of sort of complex characters, and you never know, you never do you really know these people? They're sort of unraveling and revealing different sides to their personalities spread out over a 2-year period in the game. The game takes place over 2 years. All the footage, sorry, takes place over 2 years. So you're really delving deep into their psyche, and it's about human behavior. So when you're watching the video clips, sometimes what's happening is you're only getting one side of the conversation. Two people are talking, but you only ever hear one side of it. And so you're inadvertently trying to find the other piece of the puzzle, the other side of the conversation. So what happens is you're looking at people's faces and there's silence because they're listening to the other person. But because you don't know what the other person's saying, you're looking at their detailed facial nuances and their responses, and their eyebrows are moving, and their mouths are twitching, and their eyes are sort of looking furtively into the camera. And so it's very, very warm and intimate. You feel that you're prying on, well, you are prying on people's privacy and listening to things that you feel that you shouldn't be listening to, because these are private conversations. And so musically, we wanted to aim for a very real acoustic score. So I brought in a warm chamber orchestra, and the music, the aim of the music for it was for it to sound warm and intimate, and have a very relaxed pace overall, and quite a sparse, minimalist orchestral score. So I brought in the London Contemporary Orchestra, who are great collaborators. They've played on scores like Under the Skin, or the live version of Moonlight, or Johnny Greenwood's scores for Phantom Thread, or You Were Never Really Here. So they've got a great pedigree of working on performing on feature film scores. And this was the first game that they'd ever worked on, which was a very interesting experience working with them on this. But they really got it, and they got into it. And I had 15 strings, a couple of woodwinds, and a piano and a harp. And it was a very we were trying experimental techniques. What was important for me was the relate. You can actually hear in the music, you can actually hear the relationship between the musician and their instrument. You can actually hear the sound of the bow hitting the strings, and I wanted it to be very visceral and edgy, which is how the characters are in the game. It's about human relationships, and it's quite up close and personal, and that's the kind of the sound of the instruments is what I wanted, to get that intimate atmosphere across with the purity and the rawness of the acoustic organic sounds playing.
Which
It's
leads.
quite in depth, certainly.
No,
It's
that's
quite
incredible.
in
It's great
depth.
to hear, and it leads me perfectly into my final question, which was going to be about you've spoken elsewhere about letting the musicians improvise and kind of trying to inject some chaos into the score. And I was going to ask it if you could expand on that and exactly why you've done that. And I assume now hearing that it's a part of that humanity.
Yes, I mean, everything's very very controlled. There's a lot of when I was writing the music, if I was because I wasn't writing hours and hours of music. When we had music in the game, we wanted to have an impact and make a difference to the experience and be part of that atmosphere and mood. So I made every note count. I was in control of, there was incredible precision, and every note that was in the score, there was a reason for it to be there. And so when we got to the recording session, I wanted to try and mix it up a little bit. So the orchestra recorded the music that I'd written, of course. So as Sam had heard it in my mock-ups and my demos, we emulated that, but with real musicians. And then when we'd done that part of the recording process, we said, okay, let's have some fun. Let's semi-improvise. So they had the same music and the same themes, but we did semi-improvisation. We tried out all these modern contemporary orchestral techniques of modern classical music. We did things like spectral scrubbing, and where the bow is barely touching the bridge of the violin and the cello, and it's go swirling round and round, and it has a very airy, floaty feel to it. And so we were trying, all sorts of different techniques, but playing the same music. So when you hear it in the game, you think you're listening to a character's theme. But to avoid repetition, when you hear it again later on, we sort of have alternate takes and alternate versions, so that there's a slight difference to how you hear it the next time, and that just keeps it keeps things on edge a little bit, and it keeps things from sounding totally repetitious within the game. And for me, I love that chaos and order. It stems from my degree in mathematics. When I approach writing music, there has to be this equilibrium, this yin and yang, if you like, where there's a balance to a piece of music, but then I want it to be a little bit edgy and chaotic at the same time. So that was fun to experiment with.
Right, that's absolutely fascinating. So obviously I've had a lot of conversations about game audio with composers, and I don't think I've ever heard before about the idea of utilizing different takes. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I was sort of using, I mean, we wanted a very modern score, and that was something unique that we wanted to try out, because of course in recording studios and with orchestras, time is money. We're spending thousands of pounds on recording all these amazing musicians. So I built into the schedule sort of extra time in the recording sessions, so to give us time to actually try that in a very controlled situation in the recording studio, to try something different and bring something fresh to the music as well, that we didn't know what we were going to get until we tried it. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Sometimes it was so out there and edgy, we thought, no, we can't possibly put that into the game. But sometimes it really worked. So you don't, it's good to sort of mix things up a bit.
Yeah, it's good to hear that you're having so much fun with it. So to round things off, really, how eager would you be to do something like this again?
Oh, I love working on projects that engage an audience in a new, fresh and different way. I mean, even within the world of gaming, this is quite a unique project. We don't really see, and it's been a long time since we've had FMV games for motion video games, and I don't think they've done terribly successfully well in the past. So I think they've, let's hope, with games like this, or the PlayStation game Erica, that's also out now. Let's hope that, I mean, I see this as the future of entertainment. I think that there's a demand with, I love working on film and television, and that sort of linear storytelling, but I also love the combination of non-linear storytelling in this way. And I think that audiences want to really are very demanding. They've become much more sophisticated, and I think now the time is right. If you look at something like Netflix's Bandersnatch, on the Black Mirror episode, that sort of choose your own adventure kind of thing, I think that audiences want to become much more immersed in and engaged and in control of the storytelling process, almost like being a character within the story. And this is the way forward. There are all sorts of different techniques that people are doing. Netflix are doing their thing, and Sam Barlow's approach is so unique that it'll be interesting to see where he goes next with this. But I think he's fairly committed to this kind of storytelling now. And so yeah, I mean, I'm up for writing more video games. It's really thrown me back into it, and also other forms of edgy, unique storytelling. I'm working on a series at the moment. It's for a new platform called Quibi, which is a bit like Netflix. It's a subscription streaming service, but they think that people want to watch dramas and documentaries and content on their mobile phones, as we already do. And so I'm writing music for 15 films, but instead of it being a three-part television series, it's 15 films that are 10 minutes long. And so it's a new way of telling stories, and it's purely for mobile phone, but very, very high quality content. So I'm really interested in hybrid storytelling, and this kind of game world of games and VR and Quibi and sort of films and sort of content, if you like, for unusual formats. I think it would be very. I'm so keen to. So I'm sort of constantly looking forward into the future and seeing how. Are we all going to evolve
Right.
the way we, the way we consume entertainment? That's what really interests me.
Absolutely, and it is constantly evolving, and it's great to hear that you're always interested in moving along with it. So again, thank you so much for speaking to me today, Nalita.
Thanks, Lee. It's been a real pleasure.
No, same to you. It's been wonderful, and good luck with everything in the future. I've had a couple of
Thank
people in the
you.
chat say that they're interested in playing Telling Lies just from hearing this, so that's good.
Great. Go for it.
Absolutely, yeah. Couldn't
Yeah.
recommend it higher.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
All
Bye for
right.
now.
Excellent. Bye for now, Nanita.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks to Nanita for speaking to me for the sound test. But thank you too for taking the time to listen. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, there's more about Telling Lies and its soundtrack through various links in the description. Nanita's OST is available across all popular streaming platforms, and I highly recommend checking it out in full. Don't forget that my second series of VGM podcasts is scheduled to start November 1st, kicking off with a detailed look at Minecraft with both C418 and Gareth Coker. From there, the season features several episodes about individual games and series, entire companies like LucasArts, and many console deep dives, focusing on systems like the Super Nintendo and Sega Mega Drive. Until then, Series 1 and a whole host of bonus episodes are freely available on my channel and podcast feed.